Name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. So the topic we're going to talk about today is a verse from the book of Ecclesiastes, اللي هو بالعربي سفر الجامعة. This verse is saying, live joyfully with the wife whom you love. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love. But before we dig deeper into this verse, the book of Ecclesiastes, اللي هو سفر الجامعة, can be confusing for a lot of people. And I remember 5-6 years ago, we were talking about the book of Ecclesiastes back in Atlanta to the college and the graduates, and you give the introduction to the book, and immediately you find some resistance to the book and the theme of the book. Because at the first look, at a very shallow look, at a superficial look, it looks like a very disappointing book. This is someone who is desperate. This is someone that lost hope in life. But actually, it's quite the opposite. It's quite the opposite. So what I'm going to do in the first two slides is to dig deeper to the theme of this book. Because if we understand the book, we're going to understand the verses that we're going to quote from the book today. Because this verse is from the book of Ecclesiastes, and most of the verses that I'm going to refer to are from the same book. So this book is written by Solomon, the wise, and you may wonder that he is telling us, or telling every man or a spouse, every spouse, to live joyfully with the wife that he loves or she loves. And this is someone who had 700 wives and 300 concubines at some point. 700 wives and 300 concubines. But we're going to understand, when did he say this in his life? When did he come to this conclusion in his life? Because this is, again, a very deep book that Solomon wrote. But still, the conclusion of the whole thing is that it boils down to one wife. And this is someone who had 1,000 women, or lived with 1,000 women, or almost 1,000 women. The meaning of Ecclesiastes itself, coming from ekklesia, that's what we hear in the liturgy, which is means the church or the congregation. In this context, the word Ecclesiastes, he's talking about himself. He starts the book by saying, the one who collected all wisdom, or have all wisdom, I'm giving you this advice. This is how this book is named. King Solomon himself went through three stages in his life. In his youth, he was like his dad. He was wise, and he was centered around God, and this is when he wrote the book of Proverbs, right? Then he got deeper with God and wrote the book of Song of Songs, the Songs of Solomon. And this is when he got deeper into the relationship with God. And he could not resemble the relationship between him and God with a deeper relationship than between a husband and a wife. There is no deeper relationship between two human beings than the relationship between a husband and a wife, even between parents and their kids. This is when he wrote, again, the book of Song of Songs. He went astray. He married all these women. He acquired all these women. Excuse the language here. Solomon the wise, at some point, worshipped idols. Solomon the wise worshipped idols. Then he repented and he wrote this beautiful book. After all of this, he wrote this beautiful book, and his actually confession as a book of repentance or a book of confession, the center of his confession is in Ecclesiastes 2. Sifra Gama Sahidni. This is where he said that nothing that my eyes have desired, I refrained or I kept them from myself. Nothing that I desired and I didn't have. And by the end of the day, this is what what it boils down to. The book itself is the book of his repentance, and if you want to summarize it in one sentence, it just, don't waste your time. If you are creative enough to think about trying anything, I have tried it before. And it's all vanity and grasp of the wind. This is the theme of the book. Solomon had a very unique mix in his life, which is the knowledge and the wisdom. Or what we call, in other words, or St. James called it the third third chapter in his epistle, the heavenly wisdom and the earthly wisdom. They are both called wisdom just because of the lack of an expression in the language, but actually it's earthly knowledge, it's nothing more. But he had both. He had the wisdom that he asked for from God, and God said, I will give you wisdom and I will give you everything else. And he has all this experience in his life. So this is someone that knows really what he's talking about, because God gave him a gift and he had the experience. And this mix created this beautiful book again. That I had this experience and I have this wisdom. Hey guys, this is the bottom line of all of this. Again, I remember it very well. I even remember the people who were sitting in front of me. And you feel right away when you start talking about the book of Ecclesiastes, this is just a push. Why are you talking to us about this? We are youth, we are young, we are still starting off our life, etc. Why are you talking about the book of Ecclesiastes? It's a very disappointing book. In fact, it's quite the opposite. The book of Ecclesiastes, the book of Job, the book of 2 Corinthians, especially the first two or three chapters, you read these when you have a problem. Because this is going to tell you that it's just a matter of time, and all of this is going to pass. The book is a question in a verse, in one verse, in Ecclesiastes 1, an answer in the last chapter, and to reach this answer, he had to reason with the audience in 12 chapters. So it starts with a question and gives an answer in chapter 12. So the question is, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? This is the question that he is asking. So all of this, what's the conclusion of all of that? And the answer is, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So this is the conclusion of the life of this wise man. That bottom line, obey God's command. What we are going to read today may seem like, or some of the verses that we're going to read today may seem like contradictory. He's asking you to be joyful and be merry, but at the same time, he retracts a bit and says, hey, not too much. Right? So some people, when they read the verses in the book of Ecclesiastes or the books, what does he want? He wants us to be joyful or be sad? Actually, he wants us to be joyful, and I'm going to prove this from the verses, but also put this in the perspective of life as two parts, the life here on earth and the life up in heaven. And this is why he says a lot in this book, under the sun. So there are some things that you have to put in perspective to make sense out of them, that this makes sense under the sun. There is a life to come that's above the sun. This is what he means when he says under the sun. This temporary life that we have here that will lead to eternal life. So it's very important to see what he had in his mind while writing this book. Now let's dive into the text that we want to read today. I'm going to read it in English, and then I'm also going to read it in Arabic. So the verse, just to, it's an easy reference to remember. It's Ecclesiastes 9:9. So what does the verse say, or the verses say? Go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart. For God has already accepted your works. Let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil. Good stuff. Then our focus. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days. So this man who had 1,000 women is telling you, live with the one you love all your days. Of your vain life, this is when it begins to be contradictory. It's like, okay, you're asking me to be joyful with my wife and live with her all my life, but he's saying, of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun. So the vain life is where? Is under the sun. All your days of vanity. For that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. I'm going to read the verses in Arabic as well, so we make sure that everyone is on the same page. بيقول إيه؟ اذهب كل خبزك بفرح واشرب خمرك بقلب طيب. And I'm not gonna get to the خمر business today. Okay? This is not the topic. اشرب خمرك بقلب طيب لأن الله منذ زمان قد رضي عملك لتكن ثيابك في كل حين بيضاء ولا يعوز رأسك الدهن. الآية بقى اللي هنتكلم فيها، التز عيشا مع المرأة التي أحببتها كل حياة باطلك. This is where the contradiction I was talking about. He's talking about عيش مع الست اللي أنت بتحبها كل أيام باطلك، فما تفهمش وعايز إيه يعني، تبقى مبسوط ولا زعلان ولا إيه يعني. التي أعطاك إياها تحت الشمس كل أيام باطلك، لأن ذلك نصيبك في الحياة وفي تعبك الذي تتعبه تحت الشمس. The first point I want to talk about, first of all, any questions about the book itself? Any questions about the book itself? The first point is that God is the source of all joy. God is the source of all joy. So we are going to talk about 8 points that will help me achieve this objective of living joyfully with the wife or with the spouse. The first thing is we have to understand that God is the source of all joy. The first idea here is, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, that the idea between a husband and a wife can also apply as a relationship between me and God. As a relationship between me and God. And this is what St. Paul mentioned in the New Testament about this sacrament, and he said that this sacrament is great, but I talk about Christ and the church. So the relationship between a husband and a wife is the relationship between a human soul and God, and is the same relationship between God and the church. And when God wanted to say how much he loves us or how much he loves the church, there is no deeper relationship than the relationship between a husband and a wife. The second point is from the same book, but chapter 5. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him. For it is his heritage, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. Few things in this verse. The first thing is that being happy and enjoying life here on earth is okay. Because sometimes we go to this extreme that nothing here is worth it, and we should be frowning all the time, and that smiling might give the impression that we are not as spiritual as we should be. This is all a lie. In fact, God created us to enjoy. And having a normal life, a joyful life, a merry life, enjoying the gift of God, it's repeated here at least twice in this verse, is something normal. Do not feel guilty that you are enjoying life, because this is a gift from God. The problem then becomes, the problem is not in the gift, the problem is in how we use the gift. The wife is a gift, the husband is a gift, the food is a gift, the money is a gift, marriage by itself is a gift. And we're going to talk about this in the rituals of the church, actually. But the problem is not in the food, but it's in the use of the food. This is not news to anyone, and no new news for it, for anyone here. But gluttony, it's not the food that's a problem, it's gluttony that's the problem. Lust is the problem, not marriage. And we had this debate, I remember back in Cairo, one of our service coordinators challenged us. He opened 1 Corinthians 7 that talks about marriage. And in the verses, if you don't understand them correctly, it seems that St. Paul is promoting monasticism versus marriage. But in fact, the verse that I just quote, he said that I talk about this sacrament, about this great sacrament, but I'm talking here about Christ and the church. He is actually saying that this is your way and this is my way, right? And it's means to achieve an ultimate goal. Marriage or monasticism, they are means, or it's means, not a goal. Sometimes God deprives us from a happy and easy life just to keep us from drifting away. And we're going to talk about the verse where he says that. He says this specifically. So the first point that I want to bring across is that joy and happiness is from God. And it's normal. It's okay to be happy in your life. It's okay to enjoy your wife or your husband. It's okay to enjoy the gifts that God gave you, the materialistic gifts that God gave you. But in the same perspective, he said that this is all vanity. So enjoy it, but do not focus on it as a goal. It's means, right? This is number one. Number two, God created us as couples, as he mentioned in the book of Genesis, that it was not good for Adam to be alone. So he created a helper for him, which is Eve. So man is designed to share. By design, man cannot enjoy life fully unless he shares with someone. And this is what I just mentioned, that it was not good for Adam to be by himself. The example here, of course, this picture here is, I'm lying to you, right? This picture is, it doesn't happen, right? They fight, they do not share. But imagine that a kid got a good grade at school. What is his most joyful moment? Is when he shares the news with someone else. What if you are successful in your life and you are doing good and you cannot share this with anyone? I think the joy is incomplete. So this system that God created is actually to make our marriage, to make our joy complete and to make our life or our happiness complete, that we have the capability to share with someone else. Otherwise, our happiness or our joy may not be complete. The third one is that, is in the same book in chapter 4, that two are better than one. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. So the first thing that's pointing us to the importance of marriage here is that we lift each other up. We lift each other up. If two lie down together, they will keep warm. And this can be taken on a psychological or emotional level, that you need to share your emotions with someone. But how can one be warm, though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him? This sounds like they're getting into a fight. So it means that someone might be attacked, like me and my wife, and this is the support system that God's creating through marriage, that both of us as a couple can push forward and withstand this life. Christ's husband and the wife form a complete picture of a Christian marriage. And let me here refer to the rituals of the church. The rituals of the church, when a marriage is administered or in the crowning ceremony, sometimes we think the priest is doing a job of writing the paperwork to get this document or this contract done. In fact, if you look at your marriage certificate, you will find that this priest, as a steward of God, is a third partner in this relationship. He is not, his title in the marriage deed is not witness. He is God's steward. God is putting his seal on this marriage. And as a representative of God, he is signing off for God. This is why it is not for anyone, either the husband or the wife, to break this vow, because there is a third party in this relationship that has to be consulted. And guess what? He has been consulted and he said no. Right? So that's why we do not have the authority in the church unless this relationship is broken, to break a marriage. Because actually it's a three-way relationship. And I remember Abuna Eliya back in Atlanta, he gave us a very nice analogy. Sometimes we lack happiness in our lives because God is not there. God is not there yet. It may sound very theoretical. Yani we do not have in mind, while arguing and debating about the stuff, what is God's opinion on it. If God is sitting on this table, what would his opinion be? And he gave this nice analogy that sometimes the husband and wife keep running against after each other along the circumference of the circle. In fact, if God is the center and they go radially, to the center, they can meet. But the problem is they just keep chasing each other, and God is not present there at all. Who of us, while debating something, is saying, okay, if God is sitting here, what would he say? What would his take be on this matter? So God, husband and wife, form a complete picture of a Christian marriage. So the point here is that two are better than one, and three are better than two, because we have a reference. Probably you heard it before, that the most obvious problem that faces priests when there is a problem between two couples, between a husband and a wife, is that he keeps talking about us, and they keep talking about what? I and her, or I and she, or I and he. He's talking about the system that God created, and the response is what? No, but she did, and I did, and she said, and I responded. Because this system that God created is not clear for us. So two are better than one, and three are better than two. This also applies to other aspects of life, but perfect in marriage. يعني, a lot of what I'm talking about can apply to colleagues, can apply to your relationship with your father of confession, but the perfection of a human relationship with someone else is in marriage. And I remember Abuna, يعني, Silvana's father of confession, he called us to his office before the marriage. It was two, three days before, and he sat with us in the office, and it's like, okay, this relationship that you are about to enter into is above and beyond anything else you have had in your life. And he started detailing why this is the case. But it was an eye-opening. I thought, it's like, yeah, okay, يعني, yeah, it's like anything else, but he was no. Actually, he called us for half an hour, and he kept just kneeling down this way, that this is above and beyond anything else, right? The perfection of any relationship is in marriage. If there is a take-home message, it is this slide today. Forget about everything else. So after this slide, you can nap, right? But just focus with me for a few minutes. God takes an unjoyful husband and wife relationship personal. He takes it personal. If you mistreat your husband or you mistreat your wife, he takes it personal. Can someone tell me why? How many fathers-in-law do you have? Actually, two. Right? He's your father-in-law. So if you mistreat your wife or your husband, who gets upset? Her dad. Her dad, we always worry about the dad that sees you and probably calls you to the house and need to talk and he hammers you. But there is actually someone overseeing this whole scene and he's not happy about it because you are mistreating his son or daughter. It's as simple as that. And we'll see this from the verse. I'm not making it up or trying to be dramatic, but this is what this verse is saying. In the book of Malachi, the whole book is a complaint. The whole book is a complaint. Complaint means it's a complaint from God. This is the last book in the Old Testament that leads to the New Testament. And the whole book, I think it's four chapters, it's a complaint from God about the behavior of the people. Half a chapter, which is chapter 2, is talking about the relation between a husband and a wife and how God is upset because how our houses are and how we mistreat each other. Yet you say, for what reason? What is the context of this? That God is saying previously in the book of Malachi that he's upset. He's not happy with what's happened. And the people are still wondering, why aren't you happy again? And this is his answer. Yet you say, for what reason? For what reason am I upset? Right? I will tell you why I'm upset. Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant. And focus on the word covenant. But did he not make them one, having a remnant of the Spirit? And why one? He seeks godly offspring. Therefore, take heed to your spirit and let not Nun deal treacherously with the wife of his youth. So actually, husbands at that time were mistreating their wives, and God himself was upset, and he commented on it. And it's like, this cannot be allowed. This cannot be allowed. One thing here that I'm going to hit later is marriage is a commitment. He said it's a commitment or a covenant. Covenant can be a synonym of a vow. And it's not according to the mood to treat her well or not treat her well. You don't have this option. You don't have the option. You simply do not have the option. That, okay, I don't feel good today. I'm upset. My boss gave me a very hard time. So that's why I'm a fish shigil. So she opens and reopens, and then there is a storm. You don't have this option. That's what this verse is saying. So it's not according to the mode, it's a commitment, it's a covenant to make your spouse happy. And when the church is saying that we are now in the prayer and in the crowning ceremony, that this is a contract or, I will use the word contract for the lack of a better English word in my mind. This contract of position. We think of position as if I am possessing the other. Actually, what's the meaning of it? That I'm being possessed by the other. So when he said عقد إملاك, that doesn't mean that I own the other party. But actually, it's the opposite. That I am giving ownership of myself to the other party. This is what the church is teaching us. So marriage is a commitment. And this is, again, this is what I want you to take home. That he is your father-in-law. Out of the church today, what I want you to remember, that you have two fathers-in-law. That's it. You can nap now. I don't care. Just go ahead. Saddani, I don't care. True love is the basis. That's probably another take-home message. Life or love now has very so many distorted reasons and distorted definitions. The least of which now is emotions and talk, which, as I say here, are very low in the rank of love definitions. In fact, the Bible is telling us that we should not love just by words, but by truth and work. That's what St. John is saying. Then, commitment versus emotions. Commitment versus emotions. And I put this... I put this diagram down here on the left to say that emotions are like this uneven road, but commitment is this even road. And I'm a civil engineer, and I'm telling you, you cannot build a house on emotions. You cannot. Because emotions go up and down all the time, and sometimes with steroids, they go very high, and then they go very down, very high, and very down. You cannot build a house. Just take my word for it. You cannot build a house. The first thing you do to build a house is to level it out. Have you heard this expression? You have to level it out. Then you can build. And this is the commitment. It cannot be the emotions. Right? This is, I don't want to say cheap love, but it's an easy love. And what comes easy goes easy. Then there is another thing that I want you to keep in mind. How about before marriage? Have you gotten out of yourself before marriage? Your love to the church, your love to service, the poor and the needy, the other in general. And of course, when I think about the love of the poor, I cannot find a better example than Mother Teresa. So I Googled Mother Teresa yesterday, and I found this picture. And again, I said it in the Arabic sermon a couple of days ago. There is a movie now called The Letters. Have you guys watched The Letters? It tells the story of how the Catholic Church investigated whether Mother Teresa should be a saint or not. So they went and met her father of confession or spiritual guide. They sent a delegate to meet him up to interview him. Should we canonize her as a saint or not? Read about her. So when I was searching, There is a nice picture about Mother Teresa carrying a boy like this, taking care of him, and another lady that's very famous in the media here, carrying a puppy and petting him. And the comparison was, this is someone who has some priorities, and this is another one who has other priorities. Right? But the point here, before marriage, where are you? Are you self-centered or no? And some people, if they cannot get outside of their self, they are not qualified for marriage. There are people that should not marry. Marriage is not for everyone. Ask anyone who knows what he's talking about. He said, no, this person just cannot marry. If you are stingy or greedy or violent, no, you don't have to marry. Yeah, don't bother marrying. But ask yourself, even before marriage, where were you? Imagine that the Mother Teresa decided to marry. What kind of a wife would she be? An amazing wife, right? Unfortunately, lack of love can be hidden before marriage, but not after marriage. So you can hide some stuff in the engagement period, but this thing is going to be revealed in marriage, and you have to work on that. Because probably you can get across with some hidden problems, but you cannot hide them in marriage. And I remember again, yani when I was consulting with my father of confession before marriage, but then I had a certain question. Should I trick her to see how she reacts or whatever? No, he said, don't trick her, pray. If there is a problem, that should be revealed to you, but do not trick her. Some aspects of Christian life, Christian love, and this one is very tricky, and this one, St. Paul, when he talked about love specifically, he said that love should be without hypocrisy. So any other virtue that he mentioned in 2 Corinthians, he said, okay, patience, long-suffering, and it's like, a word each, and a comma, a word and a comma. This one specifically, he said, love without hypocrisy. Because this one can be faked, but for a while, but cannot be faked forever. How do you test your true love? 1 Corinthians 13. It has all the criteria that you can test your love against. Does not seek its own, suffers long as and is kind, does not behave rudely, is not provoked, bears all things. When I was preparing this, imagine St. Paul saying this, and he is saying something that he is saying, that it does not behave rudely. And he comes and visits one of our houses today where we go above and beyond what he's talking about here. Something to think about. Something also that will help us to please our spouses is that home first. This is a problem. Home first. Sometimes my image here at the church, and I'm a first, is completely different than the home. The level of care, the time, the attention, the mode itself is completely different in a Sunday school class, for example, or in a meeting like this, than home. Why? Because we take home for granted. We don't have divorce in the church. هتروح فين يعني قاعد يعني. And هيروح فين مؤقت. I take it for granted. But if I am a mean servant, or if I am, if I don't do my job right in public, I might lose it. I might get demoted or something, or removed from service. So there is something here that's at stake, that I can be looked down to. I can develop a bad reputation. And sometimes we take the love and the care and the trust of the spouse for granted. It's like, she's not going to say anything. She's not going to do anything. I'm talking about, since I'm a man, I'm talking about the wife. She's not going to do anything. She's not going to talk about anything. It's like, whatever happens at home stays at home. And we take this trust for granted. Right? But again, remember that you have your father-in-law here may not know about it, but there is another father-in-law that's seeing this whole scene, and he's upset. He's not happy. Okay? So this is the verse that St. Paul says, but if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied faith and is worse than the unbeliever. Is it a strong thing here that he says, الهاب العربي وقد أنكر الإيمان? Why? Is this a strong verse here? Actually, if you think about it, it makes absolute sense. If you have this duality in your life, if you have this hypocrisy, the whole thing is a lie. If the Bible is telling us that you cannot love God that you do not see, if you do not love your brother that you see, how much more is the relationship between a husband and a wife? If someone cannot love not his brother, if someone cannot make his wife or husband happy, what kind of a relationship can he have with God? Doesn't make any sense. So the whole thing is a lie. And faith is not a title. Again, we're talking about this a couple of days ago. Actually, St. Paul was talking to a church and said, examine yourself, are you in the faith? To a church. امتحنوا أنفسكم هل أنتم في الإيمان? Because it's not just a title. And I put, yeah, I have faith. Faith should be manifested in works. Then, this is the slide before the last. Thanksgiving and prayer. In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other. This verse is nice. Yani, I was surprised by how beautiful this verse is. So that man can find out nothing that will come after him. Yani, God here, in his economy, he said, okay, I'm going to give you some easy and prosperous days, and I'm going to also give you some tough days so you don't drift away. I still remember Abuna Matthias was talking to us in the college class a few months ago and said, one problem here against Christianity in America is that everything is so easy. Anything is very easy. In Egypt, we have this confining pressure. Right? We have this... There are pressure from everywhere, so everything is, yani, we better stay together and stick together to survive. Here, everything is easy. You can get out of this church and go to another church. Right? And I know people who do that. They get from this meeting to that meeting to this meeting to that meeting, which causes a lot of distraction. But Solomon the prophet here is saying that God is allowing these tough times in our life not to drift away. Why? Because I have a bigger fish to fry. The best example I can think of whenever I mention this is that imagine that Pope Tawadros is coming to the church, right? And then the parking lot is packed and everyone is waiting for him. Where is my focus? My focus is that when his motorcade enters the church and I see the Pope for the first time, etc. If someone steps on my foot, will I pay attention to him? Why? Because I have a bigger focus. تعال بقى Sunday school class عندنا مثلا. He pinched me. He's any. Why? Because there is nothing. Here is empty. But when I'm focused on a bigger thing that I want to see or achieve, all of this becomes trivial. And this is what God is saying. Actually, if you heard it in the Catholic Epistle of the Resurrection Feast, St. Peter said it. He said that if you are allowed to have pain in your body, you will stop sinning. من تألم في الجسد كف عن الخطية. عارفين الآية دي؟ من تألم في الجسد كف عن الخطية. And sometimes God allows this pain so that we do not drift away. The last one is turning trials into credit. This is something also that will help us make each other joyful. And here is a story that Abuna Dawood Lam'i mentioned. Yeah. He said that there is a monk, or there is a father in Russia, that wanted to write a book about marriage. Right? So he asked his disciples and said, okay, I want you to come up with the best picture you can come up with as the cover picture of the book. So they thought about have you heard? Yeah, it's... yeah. All of them, they came back to him with a nice couple walking down the aisle, or a nice couple sitting and playing together, having a good time together, playing with their children, etc. And then he was walking in Moscow in one of the in one of the gardens there, and then he saw, according to the description, this is the best one I could get online, of a very, very old couple that are smiling and looking forward. And he said, this is what I want. This is going to be the cover book, the cover page for my book. Why? This picture tells about marriage that overcame life. The marriage that got, yani, experienced all of this, and they stayed together, they endured together, and now they are happily looking forward. So at this stage, with all the emotions are, yani, calmed down, even the physical aspects of it have calmed down, this is a marriage that survived through all of these tribulations. The other thing that he liked about it, that at this point, it's heaven-focused. He saw them sitting in this garden, holding each other, smiling and looking up. All the life is behind them, and now they are focused on a life that's the life to come. This picture also in his mind said that now they are looking at continuing this relationship in heaven. Continuing this relationship in heaven. And according, yani, to what I heard, that heaven cannot be but full of lovers. Right? If you cannot love here on earth, there is no space for you. There is no room for you upstairs. Right? It's a bunch. So these are the 8 points about that will help us live joyfully with the spouse that God have given you and me and everyone else.